I'm Jane Johnson, and you're listening to the Careering into Motherhood podcast, a series of insightful interviews with real women who tell their real life stories as working mothers. We don't preach, we definitely don't have all the answers, but we do offer different perspectives. For details about all the other support we offer, please visit www.careeringintomotherhood.com. Since we were last on air, the podcast has won an award. We got a special mention from the Women in Marketing Global Awards for storytelling. I must therefore give a special thanks to all our listeners and my guests, and a special mention to Ade Onalude, the founder and CEO of Women in Marketing, for tirelessly championing working women everywhere. Thank you, Ade. And talking of everywhere, my guest today is joining me from Tel Aviv. Born in Sydney, Natalie Shell is a journalist, coach, product and brand specialist, and advisor to many well-known blue chip companies. We first met one another when she wrote and published a letter to Sheryl Sandberg, which we'll talk about in a moment. I read her letter and got in touch because what Nat had written was so spot on, I felt I almost knew we would get on, and I was right. Nat's been a supporter and champion of Careering into Motherhood ever since. She's a mum herself, and in Israel, they're also dealing with another lockdown and kids home from school at the moment. But it wasn't really about that I invited her on. We're kicking off a series of free coaching events in the Facebook group starting this Thursday. It's all to raise money for pancreatic cancer. They start at 11 o'clock in the morning. I know that clashes with homeschooling for people who've got young kids like me, but we are recording them and you can watch them on playback, and you can get advice and support from the coach by commenting in the boxes below. So sign up to the Careering into Motherhood Facebook group. Nat got in touch about that, but we had so much else to talk about that went way beyond coaching. So I asked her to come on the podcast, and here's what we talked about.
Yeah, I love it. This is the first time that
we've actually spoken.
And yeah, I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago, was it?
The end of 2017 when I wrote the article, which in hindsight, I should have written to both of them. I should have written Dear Sheryl and Mark. And
Mark.
That would have been clever. Dear Sheryl, at the time now, I'd say, Dear Sheryl, Mark, let's stop giving the patriarchy the thumbs up.
Because I had just launched this group on Facebook, and I'd never been on Facebook before. It was something, you know, the whole concept of social media, ironically now, given I'm quite active on social media, but I'd never really been on it, and I was just finding my way on Facebook. And then you wrote this really simple point, and I just thought, oh my god, yeah, I need to reach out to you.
And you did, and I got this fabulous message that popped up in my LinkedIn. My point was, so I had written it basically a few years before that. I work before that in change management. And then when I moved to Tel Aviv, I ended up in the internet world. So doing a combination of product brand, also content creation, like writing stuff, because I am a native English speaker. So there's always a need for that with business experience. And I was advising a small startup a couple of years before that. So this is before Me Too. I wrote the article when Me Too was coming very strong. But a few years before that, or a year before that, I'd been advising a startup who had a female target market, and I was sitting with a designer, as I often do. I'd, you know, work together with the designers to make sure that the, you know, whatever the communication is matches. And she put, like, as a placeholder, this sort of icon for her hands, and they looked very masculine to me. And I said, oh, can we just switch them out? You know, sort of had a cuff and quite big-handed, heavy-handed. And when we started flicking through, you know, options for, you know, because a lot of icons just exist, you just can just download them, steal them. You know, it's totally public domain, you're not stealing from anyone. And we literally clicked through like hundreds of them, and we were like, whoa, they all look masculine. None of them are female. And I remember just being like, oh, this is really strange. And then you open your phone and you have a look at all your products. And then I sort of, you know, and then I put it aside. I used to use it in workshops, you know, when we talked about user experience and who's your target market and who's it talking to. But I don't think I thought about it in the context of the bigger thing. And what ended up happening was Cindy Gallup, who you and I both follow and love, and everyone should follow her if you don't, just because she's kick-ass. And also because of what she says about demanding salaries, which one of my friends made me promise I will talk about the fact that women need to negotiate the highest and value themselves the highest. So basically, long story short, she wrote a post and she had this image of herself talking at Teen Vogue about the default setting being male. And then I realized that this is the problem, that all around the world, all our products, and yes, you can say the Facebook like is just a symbol. But as a storyteller, I know that symbols matter because they exist basically invisibly. We don't even notice it, but they're literally shaping and informing our world. And if you take a step back from that article, so what the article was basically saying is, let's stop giving a thumbs up. Why is it a male hand? Why is the default setting always male? When we take a step back looking at our whole world, and then you could even say, is it white male or rich male or the whole system for thousands of years in many of our countries and many of our cities? I'm talking from the chairs that we sit in, is designed from the towns that we walk through, is designed from a male perspective, a male eye, to protect those people, to keep them in power. The default setting is male. And making that switch is really, it's a switch I'd like to see, and I'd like to see in our lifetime. I think many of our mothers and grandmothers, women before us, would like to see that. And that's how we connected, because I was basically saying, you know, let's stop giving this the thumbs up. Let's like look at this. Let's look at the way that our world is designed. And my hope would be that we can not just redesign but co-design. Because I think that's what I meant about my mistake with the Dear Cheryl, and it is a mistake, not Dear Cheryl and Mark, because it's not, we often expect women to solve a problem that women didn't create, or people of color, or disabled people to solve a problem that actually is like not for them to solve. It's something we need to co-create. We need to first understand the problem exists. So that's the first thing. And I remember writing this line that I don't even know how I came up with, but I know people referenced it, which is, once you see it, you can't unsee it. And I think that that's also what's happened during this COVID time. Once you see something and it's really in front of you, it's very difficult to unsee, both for good and for bad.
What do you mean in terms of the COVID thing, in terms of domestic load at home? Or
domestic load at home. Well, you know, I'm not a race expert, but I definitely think that it's both in terms of poverty, race, who's suffering is very apparent. These things have been there before, but maybe it was easy to ignore them. And also maybe there was some social cost by speaking up, which in the positive, by the way, I think people being at home and having the time to think about things on their own without having to prove why they think a particular way might have also bolstered some people in becoming much more anti-racist, becoming much more open to seeing the world as it is. Even men, I think, who might previously not have understood all the invisible tasks, the emotional load. Now, that's not true for everyone, but I do know in a lot of families, there's like from women I speak to and coach, there's been a lot of shifts, positive and negative. So I gave you a very long answer of how we met, but basically the best thing about Jane writing to me was that, you know, you write something, you put it on the internet and you don't know that it necessarily has an impact, even if people tell you that they liked it. And in Jane's case, she told me that she liked it and it had helped, you know, re-inspire or give her a little bit of energy to continue in the directions that she was doing, which has grown into this fantastic, phenomenal thing that is now, you know, advising women, for me to like see that and see, and I have a tiny part just to be next to that and see that grow is, you know, kudos to you. It's not small what's grown in 3 years.
Oh, well, you're always really supportive, so thank you. But I think the thing for me was that when I read your article, I, again, probably shows my own bias, I just kind of assumed you were UK-based or something, and then we connected. And I think you mentioned that you were Australian.
Married to an Israeli.
There you go. So let's talk a little bit about your career, and it's obviously taken around the world.
I'm born in Sydney. I'm raised in Sydney, and my mum is European. My mum's German. Part of me, I guess, was always a foot out of Australia. And I moved to New York when I was 24. I worked there in change management because I wanted to change the world, and I thought that would do it. I have a psychology degree and a business degree, and I learned some really interesting techniques for change management, and one's called appreciative inquiry. And I also learned coaching and storytelling, actual storytelling, like old school going to stand in front of a crowd storytelling, which remains one of my passions. Then I moved to Amsterdam, almost joined a consulting firm, came to Tel Aviv and stayed. And then I met my partner. Yeah, so I just like Tel Aviv better, and I can say that, and that this is no shade, this is to anyone, I'm sending you all sunshine, because having better weather during Corona time really does help, because just the stepping outside makes everyone feel better.
I think that's it with that. I know we're going to keep this a positive interview, but, you know, that's why it's especially hard, I think, for the, let's say, the Northern European countries at the moment, where, you know, the days are about 2 minutes long and, you know, there's a lot of mud. Let's just say there's a lot of mud.
Yeah, just putting my heart out. And like Jane said, I really like to focus on positive things. But I will say something that in the past 4 or 5 years, I've had a transition personally, partly because of the book that I'm also writing at the same time, which is on my grandparents. All four of them are Holocaust survivors, were Holocaust survivors. And the reality is, and also from coaching women and also having kids, we can't be positive all the time. And we shouldn't be expected to be happy or positive all the time. I think that can be to our detriment sometimes, to not be where we are. This is, for a lot of us, I will not use this word, difficult, hard, unfair time. You know, and not and just being positive, I think I would not do justice neither to your show nor to the women and men who are listening without acknowledging that. You know, we can have a lot of gratitude, but this is hard. And it's maybe less hard for some of us than others, and maybe less hard than other things that, like, my grandparents do, but it's not a competition. And I think acknowledging these darker times and then trying to find the little lights in that is also important. So I am a very positive person. I was probably born like that, and I work hard on being optimistic. But if you ask my husband, this year I've been an asshole sometimes, and it's but it's the truth. Part of it is because of mental load and emotional load. And if anyone hasn't seen it, there's a fabulous comic from France called Emma, and I'll send Jane the link so that you can watch it, read it, and share it with your partner on mental load. And, you know, so I've had this. I've just jumped from career, but I really want to say that, like, I am a positive person, but I think we do need to acknowledge that right now it is a hard time for so many people, and maybe positivity is the right energy to bring, you know, to our children and to our home, but also acknowledging that, like, it's not always great, and that's okay. And we don't have to always be happy smiling, because that's also a hard bar to swallow, I think, for some people that gives them more anxiety.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny, there's an advert, or there's been an advert running over the holiday period here for TikTok. The narrative is kind of, we know it's been a hard year, blah, 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 blah. But the it was really struck by it, because every single one of the clips they show, people are smiling and laughing, or, you know, crying tears of joy. And of course, it's supposed to be about human resilience. But for me, I just thought, oh, this is really... it just doesn't sit well. Of course, TikTok, you know, it's a social media platform and everyone's supposed to be upbeat on social media and so on. But it seemed to just erase the human suffering that has gone on over the last nearly 12 months now.
And I think it's a really important point, because for me, that's a big shift that's happened both in my coaching and I think in my life. I'm by nature not really a depressed person, okay? I'm just not. But I have times when I'm not great. And as Jane knows, I said I'm in transition right now career-wise. So after I moved here, I ended up in startups. They have a lot of innovation here. I ended up working for a company that became Wix.com, which is huge, you know, now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was a native English speaker. I was number 30. So I...
Really? Yeah. My website sits on Wix.
There you go. We have a nice plug. I still do work with them. That was not intended, but lucky Wix. They're a lovely, lovely group of people to work with, and that's usually my bottom line for working with companies still. And I've ended up, even though I've, for the last few years before Corona, came into, like, you know, burst everything open again, I've been doing my writing and my coaching and then having these smaller contracts plus running Creative Mornings, which is a breakfast speaker series. And half of that just disappeared last year.
Because it was all face-to-face.
Yeah, all face-to-face. And then therefore my book disappeared, because I couldn't write about very difficult, tough themes and then come home or be home with my kids and be and my partner and Noam and be nice. So that stopped, and I've had to transition. So I'm very lucky that people know me, and I got really nice consulting gigs. The benefit actually of not being employed full time, but, you know, not, you know, being a consultant, is that you can schedule your meetings a bit more generously, let's say. And I don't have to do the FaceTime, you know, no one has to expect me to turn up at, you know, I'll just work at night. You know, if I had one, I turned up, but it wasn't like being employed. So that was very lucky. But it's also shown me that I'm really not effective as a human without people. I need people. And my transition really is, like, wow, this last year I've understood that, yes, I have work and I'm absolutely grateful and thankful for the roof over our head and the work that we have. And I absolutely, this world does not work for me. So if you talk about design, and I've been putting a lot of energy into the digital world, this is not healthy for me. And I hope, even if the world changes totally, that we really do go back to having really healthy physical in-person experiences. I'm hungry for them. I think a lot of us are hungry for them. And I'm interested in co-creating that and having that type of impact again. As much as I value technology's ability for me to put an article and connect to someone like Jane in the UK, or for us to speak now and do a podcast to two different countries and two different time zones. I mean, that's amazing. But I absolutely think that if the world is going to this digital, everything online world, I'm not down for this. This is not good for us.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, the fact that even the kids are not thriving. It's, you know, there is something in our human makeup clearly that is, for most of us, that's not right.
So one of my social psychology professors, when I have a psych degree as well, he used to say in a very Hungarian accent, no disrespect to accents, I have one and my husband has one, my mother has one, but it was very cute. He used to say, humans are groupies. Groupies. And it was very memorable. By the way, if you have an accent, you should milk it for what it's worth. People never forget who you are. turn that into positive, you know. So humans are groupies. Even the most introverted of us, I think, need some type of social interaction or contact.
I want to talk a little bit about your, so you have got what I guess we call a portfolio career. You know, you've got done so many different things. And I think a lot of our listeners, I know from certainly from the Facebook group, when people join, ask them, you know, what's their biggest struggle or challenge. And lots of people are grappling right now with wanting to make a change, not necessarily feeling really comfortable about that. Obviously, you know, a pair of old slippers, it's always best to put the old ones on rather than try a new pair. But, you know, again, when you've made a move to freelancing, to contracting, to trying lots of different things, what, I guess, is there some advice that you can offer? How do you manage mentally, how do you manage the risk? Because it is a big risk, right? When you leave a job and you try and do something else, and there's a huge financial risk, there's a personal reputational risk. What goes through your mind when you make those changes?
Well, so I would say, first of all, it is a risk and it's a privilege to be able to do it, which is not to say that everyone can't do it. Okay, both are true. Depending on how fast you can do it, how much you can arrange on the side. I think COVID time makes that hard if you have little kids at home, you know, who have different needs, and maybe that makes certain other changes slower. I know for myself, one of the things I did that I'd never considered doing before was when I left Wix, I gave them 6 months notice. So I knew that I, when it moved to being a much bigger company, I was not the perfect person for what I used to be doing. So I was in product. And we had quite a few talks, but it gave me a lot of time to hand over and to be in talks with other people in a very public way. So if you have a good relationship with your company and you're not trying to, you know, throw them under a bus, and you really just feel like you've, you know, evolved out of it, because not everyone has bad relationships with their company, you know, or with their team. And I also subscribe to the leadership mentality that you promote yourself not to the Peter's level of incompetence, but to your level of, like, you promote yourself out of your position so the next people can come up and you go for your next thing if you can. So I think that I knew that, and I made that, you know, 6 month transition. COVID time, things just blew up. Like, I run a weekly, you know, a monthly breakfast speaker series. I'm not, you know, physically with 150 people who turn up. That wasn't there. And my passion isn't for doing that online. That's what I saw.
So you didn't move it online at all?
We did move it online. We've done 4 or 5. And I've now put out a call to hand that over because I'm not the right person to drive that. Might have been 5 years ago in a different scenario, but in a scenario where I'm not having enough people contact personally because of my freelance lifestyle, that doesn't work for me. So sometimes it's also being authentic to who we are and is this really working, with a caveat, like, what type of money position, what's the type of stress? Then you have the other side of people who, a lot of people go to work and they have a very different, I've coached people like this, they go to work to make money, to have fun in their life. So it's also your perspective on what is work, okay? What is work doing for you? And I think for some people that mental shift is really helpful. I'm going to work to make this, you know, and then maybe I need to put some different boundaries. I really hope that work plays during Corona has done what I hear some of the leaders that I know are doing, which is being much more understanding and adult of expectations of when work happens. If people have children at home, and I can see it moving around, but it's very hard. And, you know, if you don't have kids, it bleeds. A lot of my friends who don't have kids, the stuff bleeds in all through their night, you know, because like, so this is, I don't think there's any one answer. I think it's extreme. I think I do not want to underestimate in this period with uncertainty, feeling like I'm going to make a leap when what I call in career or in work and life, love, they're all anchors that keep us balanced. And now for a lot of us, all the anchors are up or very few anchors are down and firm. And so from that perspective, I can imagine for a lot of people what I'm doing is way too risky. Okay, way too risky. It depends on where you are. Have you been? The other thing, by the way, how do I get work? And it's not through social media. When I understand I need to make a change, and sometimes it takes a little bit of time, I take my own advice and I start talking to people. And at the beginning, it sounds very vague. So this time I was like, I don't have enough people contact. I want to have higher impact and I need to be working with teams, not on my own, doing something on my own. And lo and behold, I told enough people professionally, but also not professionally. You know, I also just started having these chats. Sometimes it's important to see what we're feeling and to have that mirrored with someone else. So absolutely, I coach women, I coach people, mostly women at the moment. But I, you know, love, I work with a lot of men. I love coaching men. So just, I guess, what I'm attracting. And I really see that just starting to have someone to bounce and understanding what we're thinking and what we're feeling and being mirrored in that. Now you can absolutely pay a coach, but if that's not possible for you right now, I do believe about paying people and having skin in the game. But at the beginning, you need to talk to a stranger or maybe someone who's not that close to you and just let them help you hear what you're saying.
So how do you do that though, Natalie? It's, because even that takes a certain inner confidence and courage, doesn't it, to ask somebody for help?
Yeah, I hate it. So just there you go. I don't have confidence. I just do it. It sucks and you do it. And then you realize everyone, even people listening, like my friend just told me about her daughter had a tantrum in front of the school, tantrum, like three things, you know, like in front of the kindergarten, okay? And she was so, she called me, she's like, I'm so, exactly, well, so upset and so embarrassed. And, so, and I listened, I said, I'm really sorry and I'm sorry it was a shitty morning. And she sort of stopped. And then I was like, but she's like, but all these people were looking at me. And I said, yeah, I'm sure they were. And she's like, no, but it was so embarrassing. I said, well, yeah, but probably all they were thinking was, thank God it wasn't me. Most of the time, they're not thinking like, how could you do that? Why are you doing that? They're really thinking not in a bad way about themselves, but like about themselves. So I think you lower the bar of what you think other people are thinking about you. And definitely if this time allows us anything, I think people, I would hope, and if you're not, time to lower that bar. Like this is not, this is in a really good way, a time for experimenting. No one can see you. You're at home most of the time. Experiment. Have some really bad conversations. Journal to yourself. Like what's going to happen? You're not going to have the, no one's burning you, you know, like they don't have to be with the CEO of the company you're in. So have it with some colleagues that you know or someone you connected with through a networking group or even on, you know, through Jane's group on Careering to Motherhood. Like so I think lowering the bar and experimenting, asking for help is an absolutely important tool. Sometimes we need to raise the flag and be like, this is not working. I need to get out of this situation. And then the question is, how long do I give myself? You know, how long do I, am I going to get unemployment benefits for 6 months? Is now the time to do that? Or should they do that in 3 months from now if I don't find the next job? Are there people that I used to work with who work in something that I like that I should talk to? You know, these are things once you admit that what you have, I think that's a part, important part. Admit that what you're doing isn't working. And that's okay.
Yeah, it's good to hear. I think it's good to hear other people say that because from personal experience, it's hard to admit that and not feel like a failure and then think, oh, yeah, and everything else is failing, especially at the moment, you know, like my son's having a tantrum every day and, you know, finding time for work and when we're all tired and frazzled as well and tired of what's going on. So
I'm tired of each other.
Let's keep talking. Yes, tired of each other. Exactly. We are. I'll say it. You know, I think both my husband and I were like, oh, God, I was really looking forward to you going back to work and to the office in January.
Yeah. Sure. And I think that that's really, you know, that's just the truth of this time. It's not a fun time. And there you go. That's back to that positivity thing and asking for help is like, maybe we need to, like, I don't know if you have an, every country has different rules at different stages, but soon eventually we will be able to meet one more person for a walk. Okay.
So exactly.
Going for a walk and talking is honestly one of the best secrets in the world, particularly, by the way, if you have men who don't want to speak. I've seen that even better, or introverted people. If you're moving, everything is much looser and the mouth moves. I'm sure there's totally like a technique, you know, like people do art therapy and drama therapy. I think literally there's walking or being driven somewhere or going on a subway somewhere where things are moving. I think people talk more. So that might be a really, you know, you don't have to say anything, but you could.
I love it. Brilliant tip. I think you're absolutely right.
I'm really into tools. I think we all do have tools and a lot of them are very practical, but the first part of admitting, this sort of diagnosis phase, which would be how I do any type of work, sort of what's going on, and admitting how we feel. And then there's a second part that I think is important. This I use in coaching, but I also use it for companies and for branding. How do you want to feel? I thought about how I wanted you all to feel if you would listen to me. And while I do want you to feel positive or empowered at the end, I absolutely want everyone to understand that I'm also having not perfect phase right now in my career, in my life. And that doesn't mean that I'm not excellent sometimes at what I do, but I'm absolutely failing as a mother and partner sometimes. And that's okay, because that's the reality of the situation. And honestly, if I was doing perfectly at all of this, I'd be having, I'm going to tell you the truth about the matter. That means I have a lot of help in the house. And no one, I work with a few leaders, okay? Like, you know, they're like CTOs, CEOs, head of design and brand, but like for big companies. And one of them, both her and her partner are very senior, okay? They're all C-suite and above. And she gets interviewed a lot, and we usually do interview prep, which is not my regular work, but in the way that you and I are doing it, where we're having a chat so that she can clarify the thoughts. So it's like coaching, but this is more like just clarification of the, like, what message, what story. And one of the things, because they send questions before, which I didn't realize how many questions get sent before. So just so you know, when you read all the articles, most of the things are prepped before so you can think about what you want to say. They're not just on the cover, beautifully written things, okay? But what's amazing is I've also seen the questions that her partner gets, because I've worked with him before. He gets asked totally different questions, and they both have the same three children, and everybody knows that they have three children. It's very public. Like, they're a public power couple. You know, they have three kids. People know. She gets asked how she manages it all. I don't think he's ever been asked. And we've had a conversation, all three of us, that maybe we should do an article, like pitch it somewhere where they each get asked the questions the other person gets asked. So even if you talk about the design of the world, people are getting asked different questions. So why aren't people asking guys how they're managing it at all? You know, why aren't they? Well, we know the answer. Some of it is because my wife or partner or people I employ are managing it all. But that's not a public conversation.
Yeah.
And it should be.
Of course it should, yeah.
This is the same thing that we talked about at the beginning, how we connected through the article, and that's about making the invisible visible. And maybe if there's something consistent about some of my work, it would be that. When I work in companies and they say something's not right with our website or something's not right with our brand and we're trying to understand it, I'm happy to get messy. So maybe I have more tools about saying, okay, well, there's nothing wrong with it failing because it worked until now, or maybe it didn't ever work. But now we're going to look at it. Okay, well, okay, so it didn't work. Honestly, big deal. You didn't kill anyone. Okay, like, it's like you didn't harm anyone probably. So it just doesn't feel good. And then my next question would be, okay, let's own all the feelings of the stuff that isn't working. And now let's talk about how do we want to feel? Three words for how we want it to feel, and putting ourselves in the direction of that. And that's much easier than deciding what my goals are. Now, we do goals after, and we do parameters to a project after, and everyone does that. But if you allow yourself to think about the way you want to feel, or how you want your audience to feel, or your kids to feel, these questions are once you come up with three words. Let's say I wanted you guys to feel empowered, and I want you to feel like your feelings matter, and your difficult time, which most of us are having a difficult time, matter. I'm not only going to talk to you about how amazing my life is. Well, on paper right now, compared to a lot of people I know whose whole industry and whole business blew up, we're fine. okay, we're fine. We're irritated, but we're fine.
Natalie, it's been amazing. I could talk to you for hours, but where can people find out more about you? Obviously, you, as you say, you're sort of in a career transition, but you do coaching, you're writing, you do branding work. Where can people find out more about
you? So you can find me on natalieshaw.com. I will also give Jane an email address if she won't hate me. So if someone needs to reach out, there's a contact form there. But, you know, this is the reality. Sometimes things are nasty and sticky, and the web, being the cool thing that it is, in 3 months when I sort out some stuff, can be updated. So many of us are in this between, and I do truly believe that not all things are bad when they break down. So there's a lot of bad, but we have a lot of opportunity as well to, when it goes back, not go back to the way that it was. By that means maybe your partner has to take responsibility for things, not in a passive aggressive way, just in a I can't do it all way. You don't need to be martyred.
So there you go. You can reinvent yourself. You can find work without actually really knowing what your job title is and what you're providing. And you can make supportive professional female friends just by getting in touch with someone and saying, hey, I like what you do. Don't forget, next Thursday morning, free coaching sessions being broadcast live into our Facebook group. But of course, they're available on Catch Up afterwards. Head over to the Careering into Motherhood Facebook group and find out all the details and how you can take part. I've got 12 brilliant coaches lined up, and they'll be talking about all kinds of things. The one coming up next is launching your own business. We've also got how to change your career, how to manage your career pivot, how to return to work, whole range of subjects. So definitely check that out if it sounds like something that may be of interest to you. And you can find out more about working with Natalie in our show notes or at www.natalieshell.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks.